That word, miscalculation, applies to some of what's happening in American domestic politics right now too, though in a different register. Let's start with what might be the most quietly significant story of the week. Dozens of Republican lawmakers are planning to skip Trump's midterm convention. Not defect, not publicly oppose, just quietly not show up.
And in Trump world, not showing up carries its own message. This is a party that has enforced loyalty through social and political pressure more than through policy agreement. Lawmakers who openly break with the president face primaries, funding cuts, exclusion from key committees. So when you have dozens of them willing to visibly absent themselves from a convention that the president personally championed, that's a data point about where the party's private sentiments are heading, even if the public posture stays supportive.
The midterm context is critical. Republicans are defending seats in states where Trump's approval has softened since the Iran operations began. Some of these members represent suburban districts that swung toward the GOP in 2020, for partly on economic grounds, and those voters are not enthusiastic about open-ended military engagement. Skipping the convention is a way to create distance without triggering a break.
Then there's Mitch McConnell. His absence from the Senate has now hit 80 days, and Scott Jennings, one of his closest political allies, is publicly calling on McConnell's office to clarify his plans before the Senate reconvenes on September 14th. That's not an ally offering cover. That's an ally saying the situation is no longer manageable from the outside.
McConnell is 84 years old, and he's had documented health episodes going back a couple of years. His office has been characteristically opaque. But the Senate is coming back in 11 days, and if he cannot return, there are committee chairmanships, leadership structures, and Kentucky's succession politics that all need to be sorted out. Jennings putting this on the record publicly is essentially forcing the conversation that McConnell's team has been trying to delay.
On the law enforcement and surveillance front, the FBI's use of air marshals to monitor Congressman Eric Swalwell during a commercial flight is raising serious Fourth Amendment questions. Air marshals are law enforcement officers who travel on flights as a security measure. Using them as covert surveillance assets to monitor a sitting member of Congress, if that's what happened, crosses from operational security into something that requires significant legal authorization.
Swalwell has been one of the more vocal Democratic critics of the administration, and he's had a contentious history with intelligence agencies dating back to 2020. The allegation here is that FBI resources were tasked to gather intelligence on him in flight, which is a very different thing from routine law enforcement. Congress has oversight authority over the FBI, and members of Congress conducting their official duties carry particular constitutional protections.
Then there's the federal judge who permanently dismissed the Trump administration's Sanctuary City lawsuit against Rochester, New York. This is the latest in a string of court losses on immigration enforcement strategy. The administration has pursued a theory that federal funding conditions can be used to compel local jurisdictions to cooperate with ICE detainer requests. Courts have consistently found that this theory either violates the 10th Amendment's anti-commandeering doctrine or exceeds congressional appropriations authority.
Rochester isn't a particularly large city, about 215,000 people, but it's symbolically important because it was one of the targeted examples the administration used to argue that sanctuary policies create public safety risks. A permanent dismissal, not just a preliminary injunction, means the administration can't simply refile on adjusted grounds. That legal door is closed.
And then the Vance vandalism case, an officer was disciplined for refusing to recommend a felony charge against a suspect in an act of vandalism against Vice President J.D. Vance's home. This story touches a nerve because it raises questions about whether law enforcement agencies are applying different standards based on the political identity of the victim. The officer's refusal and the subsequent discipline suggests internal disagreement within the department about how the case should be handled.
It also feeds a broader narrative that the administration is actively trying to manage, which is that there are elements within law enforcement who are resistant to applying equal treatment when the target is a political ally. Whether that characterization is accurate or not, the optics of disciplining an officer for charging decisions are genuinely problematic.